It's the Michael Jackson Show.
790 KABC Talk Radio.
790 KABC Talk Radio time. It's 10:04. I'm Michael Jackson. Our phone number 1-800-222-KABC. I can think of so many extremely appropriate ways of introducing our next most distinguished guest, but I think I'd like to keep the opening short, simple, and to the point. In fact, I'll use the words on the back cover of her book, the title of which is It Takes a Village and Other Lessons Children Teach Us. Here goes. Hillary Rodham Clinton is America's First Lady, a longtime child advocate. She lives in the White House with the President and their daughter, Chelsea. This is her first book. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Hey, with the family in mind, I've just thought of a most unusual reason for voting your husband into the White House for another 4 years. You guys don't own a home, do you?
You're right, we don't. There's another reason, which is since he's now teaching my daughter how to drive, and any of us who have driven with him, it's better that someone drive him for the next 4 years. That would help as well.
Is she dating?
Oh, yes, but I'm not going to talk about it. I'm under strict orders.
I can just picture this poor kid knocking on the front door of the White House. I've come for Chelsea. Do you envy a child of 16 anything?
You know, I don't think I do right now. I think it's very hard to be 16 at any time, and I think it's harder now than it was when I was 16. I really feel that a lot of our kids have so many more pressures than we faced.
And yet you had a premonition, because your credentials, your credibility as an advocate for children is so long established, and I wonder if people realize it. You actually spent an extra year at Yale Law School studying child development.
That's right. I became very interested in how children develop and why some children get into trouble or have problems. So I took an extra year and studied at the Yale Child Study Center when I was in law school.
Mrs. Clinton, and of course you were chairwoman of the Children's Defense Fund, what do they succeed in doing?
You know, there's been a lot of progress on behalf of children who were vulnerable, who were left out. I can remember when I first went to work for the Children's Defense Fund, being part of a nationwide survey that went door to door, Michael, knocking on doors and finding out whether children were actually in school, because there was a disparity between the number of children from the census and the number of children enrolled. There were so many children with relatively minor disabilities. There were children who were being kept at home to take care of younger children. There were so many reasons why kids weren't in school, and the Children's Defense Fund spearheaded an effort to make it possible for every child to go to school. Good. Also has worked very hard to increase health care for the poorest of our children, something that is at risk now. We have made progress in bringing down infant mortality in many communities. We've made progress in taking care of kids who before would have died or would have been severely disabled, and that's at risk as well. So, you know, we have a lot of problems in our country, but we shouldn't overlook the successes that we've also achieved on behalf of kids.
Before you came in, we spent the hour talking about you and got all kinds of questions, and one man, a very young man, called up and basically asked whether you were a good mother. And I suppose one follows that up with, is the president a good father? You are both ambitious, driven, hardworking. Can you be good parents? Are you as good as you'd like to be?
Well, I hope that I'm as good as my own mother was. That certainly
That's
has been my
start.
Example
yeah.
for all of my parenting. I don't know. I think once you're a parent, you just do the very best you can and kind of hold your breath. Mm-hmm. My mother told me the other day that she said, you know, Hillary, when you were growing up, I never had a sleepless night over you, and now that you're in the White House, I can't get a night's sleep. You never stop worrying about your child, no matter how old your child is. But I feel I can speak very confidently that my husband is an excellent father. He has been involved and supportive and caring with our daughter from the moment he laid eyes on her, and we're very proud of her and feel very lucky about the way she's developing.
Has she reached an age where you can say, I've learned from Chelsea, and then fill in the blank space? Have you?
Oh, from the very beginning. I mean, when you said that, you know, my husband and I are very, you know, hardworking and all of that. You know, one of the things we've learned from her is, you know, to slow down, be more patient. And that, of course, came from caring for a baby. You know, in my book, I say that, you know, one night very, very early after bringing her home, she was just inconsolably crying. And I was rocking her, and I just looked at her, and I said, you know, you've never been a baby, and I've never been a mother. We're just going to have to help each other. And that's pretty much what we've done. She's taught me a lot.
And the infant looked up and said, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, oh, dear, I have to do that, too.
Before leaving the White House, what would you like to have accomplished for children?
I'd like to have been not only a voice for children, which is what I said coming into my husband's administration, which is, for me, what health care was all about, trying to make sure every child had the health care that my daughter had. But I would like to see some other positive changes for children in addition to health care. I'd like to see our adoption and foster care system change so that we don't leave children in limbo the way we do now. I would like to have us move more quickly to make a decision whether a child should be returned home or put up for adoption so that that child could have a loving family. I would like to see us act more like a village, as I talk about in the book, so that we support parents and we give parents the confidence and the education and the skills they need to be the best possible mothers and fathers. There are many things that would flow from that if we worked on it.
This is KABC Los Angeles. Our guest, the First Lady of the Land, Hillary Rodham Clinton. I'm Michael Jackson. It takes a village. Village is a word hardly ever used these days to describe a place, an environment in this country anymore. It sort of harkens back to simpler times. What, as you view it, is the role of government in reversing the crisis affecting our children?
Well, you know, Michael, I'd like to just turn that question a little bit and say, what is the role of all of us and our institutions? There's been a false debate going on in our country that pits the government against the family. And there are some who argue that the family should just do it on its own and no one should interfere. And others who believe that the government should have a very big role. I'm someone who thinks that there's more than enough responsibility to go around, starting with the family and strengthening it, but that businesses have a role in supporting families. You know, every time a business lays off a person or downsizes, they're laying off a family in most instances. I think the media has a very significant role in determining how children develop. So do our schools, our religious institutions. So the government is one of many institutions. And yes, the era of big government is over, but the era of useful government, of government being a partner to support families and children, is not over. I think government has to be the last resort safety net for the poor and the vulnerable. The government has to represent all the rest of us when a family is hungry or a child is abused. I think the government also can help us to set our standards on a national basis to determine what is it that children need to know in school and how do local communities go about making that happen. The government can also do important things to help parents control the influence of television. The president, as we speak, is signing the telecommunications bill, which contains a requirement that the so-called V-chip be put into television sets so that parents can program their TV sets so that things they don't want their children to see, they won't. So there are many important positive roles for government, but it is not just the government, it is all of us.
Okay, let me join the words government and your mention of health care. Have you given up on guaranteed medical care for children? Have you put behind you any further massive attempt at the overhaul of the health care system?
Well, I don't think we will see a massive attempt, but there are things we could do that would make a difference. There's a bill pending in the United States Senate. It's sponsored by Nancy Kassebaum, a Republican from Kansas, Ted Kennedy, a Democrat from Massachusetts. It has broad bipartisan support. It would enable parents, families, workers to take insurance with them if they were laid off from a job or moved jobs. It would also eliminate the prohibition against pre-existing conditions, or at least the cost of that for people who have some kind of illness. That would make a big difference in the lives of many families. So there are things we could do right now. Would I like to see us in this country be sensible about health care, provide a system that insured everyone? Absolutely, and I think it is inevitable. Or we will see a health care system that is driven so dramatically by the marketplace that many of us, people who always thought we would be insured, will find that we are not.
Let me quote your writing, Mrs. Clinton. You say, I write these words looking out through the windows of the White House at the city of Washington in all its beauty and squalor, promise and despair. Here's the point. You add, in the shadow of great power, so many feel powerless. They are powerless. Can that ever change?
Yes, it can. I'm disturbed by the way people feel powerless today and the amount of cynicism and hopelessness that many Americans feel about their own lives. There are many things we can do, starting in our own homes, to take more authority back, to have more power over what our children do and what they're exposed to. And with respect to government, you know, it is a very challenging time when we see so many who claim to speak for the vast majority of Americans, when those Americans themselves don't vote, don't speak up, don't make sure that their views are heard. And I would really hope that everyone who listens to you, Michael, understands they really could make a difference, and not to feel the sense of powerlessness that is too common today.
I can remember conversations we've had with other first ladies, Barbara Bush, when she came through here with her book, Written Through the Voice of a Dog, nice light reading. Nancy Reagan, she had a book that we discussed on foster grandparenting. You've told me only one fib so far, Mrs. Clinton. It says here, this is your first book.
It is.
Are you saying categorically that you did not write Primary Colors?
Well, I can say that without fear of contradiction.
Glad we got that straight. Our guest, the First Lady of the Land, Hillary Rodham Clinton. When we continue, I'd very much like you to answer to your critics, those who proclaim that it's the Whitewater is something serious. They haven't found anything. But no, I'm answering my own question. Those who state that you've handled poorly the situation with the documents that were found in the family quarters of the White House, would you mind if we get to that?
Oh, absolutely not. I'd be glad to answer questions about that.
It takes a village, and other lessons children teach us. Our guest, Hillary Rodham Clinton, I'm Michael Jackson on 790 KABC Talk Radio. 790 KABC Talk Radio time, it's 10:19. I'm honored to have with us the First Lady of the Land, Hillary Rodham Clinton, author of It Takes a Village, and Other Lessons Children Teach Us. Our phone number, 1-800-222-KABC. By the way, Mrs. Clinton, in the current issue of U.S. News, there appears the following statement, and I wonder if it is something dreamed up by a journalist, an unfriendly one, or if there is some or any truth to the comment. He wrote, "Friends say she is under tremendous stress, drained by constant attacks on her character and credibility, and uncertain where the next blow will strike." Doesn't look that way.
I don't feel really drained.
No.
I must say that there are good days and bad days in this position, and I've had some pretty challenging ones in the last 3 years. But I feel very good about what my husband's doing, and mm-hmm. I feel very mm-hmm. positive about the future.
Okay, then have you done anything wrong?
No. That's the short answer.
Wouldn't I make a good committee chairman?
You would cut to the chase and yeah. we could start saving some money and talking about real issues in America. I would like that a lot.
So why does it go on?
Oh, I think it goes on, Michael, for mostly partisan political reasons. That's how it started back in the campaign of 1992. That's how it's continued. And, you know, when you have constant questions being raised and charges being hurled back and forth, it's almost difficult to keep up with them. It is for me sometimes. You know, this all started when people said that we had been in a land deal in Arkansas, mm-hmm. and we said, yeah, a great land deal. We lost money. And they said, oh, we mm-hmm. don't believe you. We said, well, it's true. And they said, well, then you took money from a savings and loan. We said, we did not. But we had to wait 4 years until an independent government study that cost $4 million proved that we had lost $40,000. You know, sometimes I feel like Alice in Wonderland down the rabbit hole. I can't quite grasp mm-hmm. the priorities. There's been, I think, more than 50 days of hearings about Whitewater and only one on the future of Medicare. It doesn't make sense to me.
No. There was a quote of the senior White House advisor, George Stephanopoulos, speaking of you, and I don't know if you read it, and I wrote it down. He said, 1 week she's the health care czar, then she's Hillary Clinton, the mother, then Hillary, the lawyer. All people get of her are serial photographs in slow motion instead of a moving 3D film. It's frustrating that each of these facets of her personality is magnified, analyzed, and made to seem a symbol of her whole being when, in fact, she is all of these things in all of their depth. That's a very nice comment, isn't it?
I think it's very accurate, not only about my life, but about the lives of most women I know. You know, we are playing many different roles, trying to lead integrated lives. And if people only see a snapshot at one point in our lives, you know, they might say, oh, there she is, dressed up for a state dinner for the president of France. That doesn't square with the picture that I had last week where she was talking about the need for health care.
Did you see yourself being criticized by Arianna Huffington in a syndicated column for the piece of jewelry you were wearing?
I don't read
it
her.
It was called... No, I can read her. it said you wore the obligatory brooch.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds dreadful, doesn't it?
Yes.
We ought to just pack me up and send me away for that terrible sin.
I think that the aura of power that surrounds you as First Lady of the Land is enhanced by your willingness to take on the tough policy issues. Why do you do it?
For more than 25 years, Michael, I have cared about what happens in this country. I mean, I know it sounds maybe corny, but it is what moves me and motivates me. I really think we could do a better job, particularly for children. I would be so untrue to myself and to these 25 years of work with wonderful people if all of a sudden my husband were elected president and I shut my mouth. I don't think that is appropriate. I think that every one of us as a citizen, regardless of whether your husband's the president, mm-hmm. Has an obligation to do what we think we can do to try to make our country better.
Mrs. Clinton, do you ever find yourself having to, on policy issues, argue your case forcefully, as anybody else would have to do around the president, with the chief executive?
Well, he and I have been talking about these issues, really, ever since we first met, and that's more than 25 years ago now. We don't argue. We talk a lot. We really discuss, you know, what we think about things. And not on every issue. There's most things that he does during the day I have no opinion on. We don't have mm-hmm. a conversation mm-hmm. about. But when it comes to, you know, issues that affect women and children, the poor, the vulnerable, people who I think are getting a raw deal because they're workers who are not getting appropriate pay and benefits for the work they do, we talk a lot about that.
Can we talk about children? Hospitals.
Yes.
They will never turn away an old American, thank God, because they've got Medicare. Why don't we guarantee the same for our children?
That's one of the questions I raise in this book. I have so many stories I could tell. I told only a couple of children who still are being turned away from hospitals. That's something I just can't understand. You know, you walk in, do you have insurance? No, we'll go, you know, down the road, even if it's an emergency. I know the story of a young girl who died because her mother didn't have insurance, and she was just sent home with aspirin when she had spinal meningitis. Last night I did a benefit here for the Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, and one of the reasons why the proceeds from my book are going to children's hospitals is that they don't turn away children, but they're able to do that because they have government support through Medicaid. And as I said last night, if we cut back on Medicaid, cut back the entitlement that poor children are entitled to, it won't only affect those children, it will undermine the accessibility of health care to a lot of other children who depend upon the entire system being able to operate for them.
Our guest, Hillary Rodham Clinton, a woman who has had, continues to have, a long-term sincere interest in children's welfare, the author of It Takes a Village, First Lady of the Land, Hillary Rodham Clinton. We'll continue in just a moment. I'm Michael Jackson on 790 KABC Talk Radio. KABC.radio. Time is now 10:28. I'm Michael Jackson. Our guest is a children's advocate. She's not one who became a children's advocate after she became First Lady. Her work, most particularly with the Children's Defense Fund, has been nonstop for over 20 years. Author of It Takes a Village, Mrs. Hillary Rodham Clinton. I'd love to turn to some of the incoming phone calls, but do you hate the press?
No, I do not hate the press. I think that, you know, there are so many people in the press who do the very best job they can. But I do think that for commercial pressures and because of the mm-hmm. aura of cynicism in our country today, there are some in the press who care more about getting a story in print or on TV than the accuracy of it or the truth of it. And as with any profession or business, there are those who do an excellent job and those who don't. But the influence they have is so great over the rest of us that I think they really need to be held to a high standard by themselves.
I think the sadness of the cynicism is, and I'm thinking particularly of people with bully pulpits in radio, that they turn people off not turn people on to the whole system.
Well, that's one of the great dangers we face here in our democracy, is that if people feel like it's a pox on everybody's house, they can't believe anybody, all they hear is negative stuff all the time, nobody's given the benefit of the doubt, every human frailty is held up, you know, under the biggest possible microscope, then people will get turned off, and they won't participate, and we will be largely governed by those who can afford to hire folks who will be special lobbyists and will work very hard because they're paid to do so to get the outcomes that they want, which I don't think any of us would desire.
Let me pick up on those words, special, that word, special. Did anyone grant you special or preferential treatment when you invested in the Whitewater real estate deal or when you ventured into that very risky world of commodities trading?
No, they did not. In the commodities market, I was in the marketplace and lucky enough to get out before I lost money. And in the Whitewater deal, if they had, they did a pretty poor job of it since I ended up losing money.
What was Vince Foster like?
Oh, he was a wonderful man, Michael. And he was a great friend. He'd been my husband's friend since kindergarten. He'd been my friend since I moved to Arkansas. He was a great father and husband and just a wonderful human being. And, you know, it's just tragic the way his depression and suicide has been used for political purposes.
The whole idea of the mysterious, you know, Whitewater files that were found in the office of Mr. Foster. He was deputy White House counsel then, on the day that he died. Why were they there? I mean, is it possibly because he was coordinating the establishment of your blind trust?
I think that's probably the reason. I can't speak for him, obviously, but the personal files that he had related to the income tax returns, which he had to help the private attorneys and accountants know the government ethics rules about, and the blind trust creation, so that he had to have some files, apparently, to be able to do that work. But, you know, I think that it's so sad and almost pathetic that what was an innocent effort to try to comply with regulations and rules has been turned into this kind of conspiracy that doesn't make sense at all.
You use the word privacy. You've often spoken in the past to friends and others of your zone of privacy. What's it like to be rezoned?
Well, I'm not sure I'm there yet. Oh, it is difficult. You know, it is hard for me. I'm the first to confess this, that I just don't understand why people are more interested in a brooch I wear than in whether or not we're going to take care of all of our children's health care needs. I really have a hard time dealing with that, and I admit I haven't handled it perhaps as smoothly as others have before.
I don't think you'd be very different if you did it all over again, would you?
Well, I think I would have tried to understand more about the expectations that I was walking into. I also would have spent whatever time I could have trying to let people know me a little bit more in a fuller way so that I didn't get stereotyped and snapshotted, as you were talking about. I'm sure I would have made the same or different mistakes, but I would have tried to avoid doing things that have been perhaps confusing to people.
Can we take some of the incoming calls?
I would love to.
Raoul, you're on 790 KABC Talk Radio with the First Lady.
How are you, Mrs. Clinton?
I'm fine, thank you.
It's so wonderful to talk to you. I just wanted you to hear from somebody who you would think was on the other side of the... Mr. Jackson, excuse me for not saying good morning to you.
I don't care.
Well,
I mean, I care.
You're marvelous and wonderful.
Thank you.
But I'm a lifelong Republican graduate of USC in economics who really believes in what you're doing.
Thank you.
And your husband as well. I think you're to be commended on everything you say and do. And I think your child is adorable.
Oh, you couldn't say anything nicer to me.
She's terrific. She's cute as they come and such a lady. And I just, I'm really impressed by what you've done. I allowed you for it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Raoul. I appreciate your call. Jeanette, you're on 790 KABC Talk Radio with the First Lady. Hi, Jeanette.
Hello. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I want to commend the First Lady, Ms. Clinton. Good morning to you. It's very exciting to talk with you.
Good morning,
and
Jeanette.
You, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you.
Before I start, I just want you to know it was about 5 or 6 years ago that I heard about this guy named Bill, and you have to vote for him, Mom. And my son is the same age as your daughter.
Oh, you have a very smart child.
I just wanted to give you my support and empathize about the challenges you have right now. My story was featured in a documentary called It Was a Wonderful Life about the hidden homeless, homeless women, and three of us had children. And one of the reasons that I got to that position was because while I was suing my son's father for paternity and child support, mm-hmm. he turned around and sued me for defamation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
You were homeless for how long?
2.5 years.
Are you now okay, better settled, Jeanette?
Well, better off. I was working. You see, nobody knew. You know, none of our... That was the uniqueness of this documentary, was that here we were, very upper middle class women, finding ourselves in such straits. So if it could happen to us, it could happen to anyone. And that was the theme of the film. Now things are much better. I'm pretty much through with litigation. I'm just trying to straighten out all my other financials.
Well, it's the story of the world. Can you imagine what the Clintons' legal bills are?
You know what? I could probably put it down to a penny.
That's your husband on the other line there. Jeanette, thank you for your call.
Thank you for calling, and I loved the sort of optimism I hear in your voice.
Yeah.
I hope that things really do work out well for you.
Thank you, ma'am. How do you do it? How do you concentrate on all that matters while being bombarded from so many directions by accusations and rumor, by frequently trivia?
You know, I'm very fortunate that I have such a tremendous amount of support, not only from my husband and my daughter and my mother and all my family, but from friends who are very loving and supportive. And I just keep trying to keep my own mind on what's really important. You know, this could be the last day any of us live. I mean, how do I want to spend it? Do I want to spend it being agitated and upset by these ridiculous stories and charges that are made, people trying to gain political advantage at my expense or my husband's, or do I want to try to do something positive?
I want to go back to your children for a moment. When I heard that lady who'd been homeless for 2.5 years with a child, knowing I'm speaking to a woman who has a 16-year-old, I remember taking my own 16-year-old when... No, she was not 16. She was about 12, to Manhattan for the very first time, when we were down in the Bowery, and she saw kids, children and women and men in doorways, and she said, "Does God know they're there?"
That's a wonderful question. Yeah.
How do you answer as a parent?
Well, you know, in the book I talk about how children are the best theologians. They ask the hard questions, and if we listen, that's another lesson we can learn about what's really important. You know, you answer the hard questions the way parents have been answering them for millennia. You say that, you know, yes, of course God knows they're there. And, you know, this is not what God wants for us, but this is what happens in life and being human beings. All of us are subject to unfairness and mistreatment and problems that we have to try to live through. And, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate about my daughter's opportunities is that she's been, you know, given community service requirements in her school. So she goes into shelters and works with, you know, homeless children and families. And many of her friends do as well, so that they see, yes, there are these very unfortunate circumstances, but these are people just like us. They have feelings. Mm-hmm. They have hopes for the future, and we can do something to help many of them.
Yeah. Chapter 4, The Bell Curve is a Curveball. Can you keep your cool when you read scholars proclaiming that intelligence is fixed at birth? You know, part of a genetic makeup that can't be changed?
Well, I think that it's like so many of these debates that we're engaged in now in our country. It is not either or. It is both nature and nurture. Yes, there is a genetic quality to intelligence and to talents. I mean, I have absolutely no ear for music. I cannot learn a foreign language to save my life, which is a great embarrassment. But I also know that we can do so much with what genetics gives us. And children born with the same genetic makeup, we now know, can either be given opportunities to develop or be stunted.
You can't sing?
No, I sing all the time, but no one wants to hear me.
I often wonder whether people who are completely tone deaf therefore appreciate no music or all music.
Well, my husband would argue all music in my case, without discrimination.
I've got to tell you something about one of your colleagues. One day I was talking on the air about country music, and coming into the studio was the vice president, and he heard me say, "It's all about sighing and dying and going away." It really bugged him.
Oh.
So he sent me 3 recordings of Anne Murray. So my collection of country music began as a result of Al Gore.
Good.
Our phone number, 1-800-222-KABC. Before the next call, they're thinking back about the bell curve as a curveball. So if nothing can be changed, if these brilliant scholars are right and they're wrong, but if nothing can be changed, and this is political expediency surely at its worst, then little needs to be offered to those who begin life with fewer resources in least favorable environments.
That's the argument, Michael. It lets everybody off the hook. Yeah. It lets parents even off the hook. It lets all of us. You know, there was an article yesterday in the papers talking about the relationship between the ingestion of lead and yeah. violent, aggressive behavior among mm-hmm. children. Mm-hmm. Now, that is an environmental problem. So if we think, well, these children are born that way, nothing we can do about it, then fine, don't have a lead abatement program. Fine, don't try to help children who are in very difficult circumstances or help their parents learn what they need to do for these children, like talk to them and read to them and nurture them. It just lets everybody off the hook,
yes.
and it leads to survival of the fittest, where we all fend for ourselves. I don't want to live in an America that is filled with doorways of people we can drive by with our windows up and point and say, well, they were born that way. That's mm-hmm. absurd. That's not America.
Oh, they like it.
Oh, yes.
How do you respond to them, those who feel that for pragmatic reasons, we must cut back somewhat on environmental standards? I mean, who benefits from the elimination of federal regulations that protect our drinking water?
Well, no one in the medium or long run. In the short run, people who don't have to pay to make sure that they're not discharging pollutants and toxics into our water or into, you know, the environment. I think that the environment is a classic case of how we, again, are looking at this from the wrong direction. It should not be an either-or issue. We can be both economically active and environmentally protective, if we are sensible about it.
Mm-hmm. Our guest, Hillary Bottom Clinton, First Lady of the Land. Ben, you're on 790 KABC Talk Radio. Ben? Oh, well, let me take the next call then. Phil, you're on 790 KABC Talk Radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
It's an honor, First Lady. I applaud your efforts on behalf of youth, our most precious resource. I'm a retired inner-city teacher and coach, and I just wonder how we can expand the public's awareness and sustain their participation and support in dealing with this very urgent and rising crises.
Oh, well, let me thank you first for being an inner city teacher and coach.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more important task than trying to, you know, help educate all of our kids, which is why I support public education so strongly. I think there are a number of things we can do, and you have probably seen them firsthand because you've undoubtedly influenced so many children's lives. You know, where the family needs to be strengthened, we should help. But as I say in the book, we are not immune from the greater environment, no matter how strong our family might be. There is so much for adults to do. I wish every adult could be a big sister or a big brother or be, you know, a scout leader or be willing to go down and, you know, shoot baskets with kids who have no male role models in their lives or volunteer in the schools, yeah. be a mentor, be a tutor. There's so much that we could do that would just be one-on-one trying to help an individual child but would aggregate to making big differences.
Could I ask Phil a question? Yeah. Phil, are many of the children with whom you come into contact each day getting pregnant?
Far too many, and I think that's one of our major problems. It's children having children, as the cliche goes, and
mm-hmm.
they're not equipped to parent because they haven't been parented themselves.
That's right.
And it's tragic because exponentially the far-reaching effects, I mean, it's just a rising, growing crisis. And may I make one other comment, sir?
Yes, of course.
I appreciate the time, and I respectfully to the First Lady would request consideration for a President's Council on Youth that would better inform people
mm-hmm.
and keep them aware and alert to just what a serious youth crisis we have and how they may participate and how they may help and what
mm-hmm.
organizations and agencies they could support and I think it would be extremely beneficial. To my knowledge, there is no national organization that provides this service.
Phil,
it would be private sector funding, so the outcry of government budget and increasing the size of government, I'm sure the private sector, the youth, people
well, forgive
that
make me, Phil,
millions
you're going through
youth.
The entire program, and
I'm sorry.
I respect your zeal. Just last evening, Phil, I was with a woman named Diane Cook of Planned Parenthood, and I thank you for your call. You were going to say.
I wanted to let Phil know that the president has just announced a commission on teenage pregnancy that is exactly as Phil describes it. It is a private, not-for-profit organization. It's not in the government, but the government will be assisting it. And a number of people from every part of the ideological and political spectrum have agreed to be part of this. Mm-hmm. And clearly one of its missions will be to focus on how we get more people to pay attention to this crisis and give children and young people things to say yes to besides early sexual activity, experimentation with drugs and alcohol, the things that we know are self-destructive and harmful to society.
Teacher, thank you very much for your call. I mentioned Diane Cook and Planned Parenthood. What are they doing? Are they helping?
Well, I think that there are many groups that are trying to help better prepare young people to say no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the book, I talk a lot about the need for stressing abstinence. You know, I think that is very important. I have a kind of, personal belief that, you should try to get children to avoid sexual activity until they're over 21, and then, just don't tell me about it. I mean, I think there's a way in
at
which...
At the age of 21,
yeah,
they're not going to tell
once they're grown
you.
Up, right? But until that point of maturity and mm-hmm. responsibility... But it's very difficult. Look at the messages these kids get. Look at what the media saturates them with, particularly television. Look at the emphasis on appearance, how people look, whether they're sexually attractive or not, mm-hmm. instead of what's in their heart and their soul and their mind. I mean, it is not a problem of just the kids themselves. It is a problem of the messages that we send to kids. And we will not get a grip on young people and on these problems like teenage pregnancy until we change the cultural messages that children receive, and that means adults have to lead the way.
Greg, you're on 790 KABC Talk Radio. Our guest, the First Lady of the Land, I'm Michael Jackson.
Mrs. Clinton.
Yes.
This
yes.
question is from someone who admires you greatly. I would just like to ask you, what do you think of the Clinton Bash's poster boy, Larry Nichols, and the right-wing radio talk show host who love him?
Oh, I think it's just sort of ludicrous, I
yes.
guess is the word I would use. I never understood why any self-respecting journalist would take seriously these outlandish stories that have been motivated for political reasons, for commercial reasons. I guess it just gives them something to talk about. I just really can't even take them seriously enough to comment on them.
Good, Greg. Bob, you're on 790 KABC Talk Radio with Hillary Rodham Clinton. I'm Michael Jackson. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes.
Mrs. Clinton, first of all, I want to tell you how much me and my wife have regard for you and your husband and
thank
the job
you.
That you're doing. And what I wanted to call to ask you today was please don't give up on health care. I don't think the Republicans had a mandate to stop health care when they were put into office. I think they're misinterpreting that. And there are so many people. I'm a laid-off aerospace worker, and there were so many lies told during when you were trying to get health care initiated. One, I would always hear people call and say, when people get laid off, they've got the COBRA plan.
Oh, no.
Well, listen, me and my wife checked into the COBRA plan, but it cost us $730 a month
I
for
know
health
it.
Insurance, me and my wife. And when you're collecting $230 a week in unemployment insurance, the COBRA plan is not a realistic alternative. And during the last election, I did ballot initiatives and circulated petitions. And in California, we had a petition we tried to put on the ballot that was for health care for Californians, and the insurance companies just put out so many lies to get it defeated. But what I want to ask you, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way, don't give up on health care.
I don't think we can afford to, and your story is so common. Yes, of course, the insurance companies say, people can get insurance, yeah, but it's not within reach. It's not affordable for many people. And, there are now more uninsured working Americans today than there were when the president took office. So the problems that he has tried to address through the health care reform efforts are not going away. In fact, they're getting somewhat worse. I would urge you to help people contact members of Congress so that we could at least take the steps forward in the Kassebaum-Kennedy bill. That would be a step forward for someone in your position because you could have maintained your same insurance policy, not a COBRA policy, but what you had. Again, it might have been expensive, but you could have at least maintained that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that if you call or write the Congress and let them know you want some steps taken, I believe that eventually we'll see some changes.
Thank you very much indeed for your call, Bob. How would you define the role of the First Lady of the Land?
I don't think there is any single definition. I think it's so dependent upon who the person is, who the president is. And I'm really against trying to pigeonhole the women and maybe eventually the men who will be in this role, because I think that people should do what is best for them and support their husbands however they see this best and try to take care of their family and make their contribution to the country.
Making hers is our guest, First Lady of the Land, Hillary Rodham Clinton. This is 790 KABC Talk Radio. From 90K ABC Talk Radio, time 10:53. I'm Michael Jackson, the author of It Takes a Village. And I think maybe we should explain. It comes from an old African expression. Are you with me or still signing autographs?
I'm about to finish.
Okay.
I'm signing my books.
I want to tell you, I've been at the station approaching 30 years. There has never been a staff reaction. Nobody got a freebie book. Actually, I did. But nobody got a freebie book. They went out and bought them, and there are stacks of them here for you to sign. Some people say that you're the greatest liability that the president has for re-election. Can I give you my own honest reaction? I think you're the greatest asset he's got, beyond himself.
Well, I'm sure with some people I'm a liability, and with others I'm an asset. But I think that the president will be judged on his own merits. I would like to be judged on mine.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I hope that I can help him because I really believe in what he's doing, and he's a wonderful man.
Let me go back to last night in Children's Hospital. Why particularly, specifically, that charity?
Well, I have spent a lot of time in and around children's hospitals. I've worked for years to raise money for children's hospitals, particularly the one in Arkansas. And they are like villages. You know, the little girl who introduced me last night, Daniela Fortuna, what a beautiful child. It was born with a disfiguring tumor on her face.
Oh, God.
And because of not only the skill of the staff there, but the love that her parents and the people at the hospital have given her, she has just made so much progress. She had so much confidence. She spoke so well. And I see those miracles happening because there's a place where people come together and they really are devoted to children. And I want that example out there.
Our phone number, 1-800-222-KABC. And from the moment of your arrival, of course, every line has been busy. Alan, you're on KABC Talk Radio. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael. And to Mrs. Clinton, I would like to say why I think she will probably be on a virtual, if not actual, Mount Rushmore of First Ladies, perhaps along with Martha Washington and Eleanor Roosevelt and some perhaps unknown young woman who will ascend to the position because she is inspired by Mrs. Clinton. I think she is a target because she is a strong and assertive and activist, and that makes her a target of small minds sniping at giants, as we have seen through history. I like to present another side that is etched in my mind. About 3 years ago, very early in the administration, on 60 Minutes, when they did one of their anniversary shows, Mike Wallace was interviewing the first couple, and something totally unexpected happened. There was an explosion, a crash, and glass came tumbling down. And the reaction of the first couple was something that I will never forget. They didn't know in these times it could have been...
could have been anything.
Anything that attempted...
Leave it at that, okay? Could have been anything.
Yeah, and the reaction of the first couple, she instinctively wrapped herself in his arms, just threw herself toward him, and he wrapped himself around her. There was no time to think about anything, but at that time, it was a man and his woman, not the first couple.
Right.
And he was just protecting her. There was no other thought. And I remember that, and that's the bottom line between the first couple. It's a man and his woman, and regardless how strong you may think and assertive she is, she still is a woman, and I love that about her.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Oh,
Alan. Isn't that nice?
You know, you brought tears to my eyes. I remember that moment and how scared I was. And you're right. My husband was there for me, as he has been throughout our 20 years of marriage.
Do you ever read Doris Kearns Goodwin book, No Ordinary Time?
It's a wonderful book. I love that book. Yes.
On Eleanor Roosevelt. Have you had heroines in your background? Are we allowed to use that word anymore?
Oh, we should.
Okay.
Heroes and heroines, we should absolutely. You know, there are many women whom I have admired, but certainly since moving into the White House, my admiration for Eleanor Roosevelt and other women who've been in this position has just grown so great. But there really wasn't anybody ever like Eleanor Roosevelt. She did everything first. You know, when I go places, if I visit the Child Welfare League in New York, Eleanor was there. If I go to visit the Delaney sisters before Bessie died, those wonderful older African-American women who are such examples to us, Eleanor visited them in 1950.
Yeah, she'd been there, done
she
that.
She is such a pioneer, and I have these imaginary conversations with her sometime. You know, I say, oh, my goodness, look what's going on now, and she says things like, buck up, you know, don't take it seriously. She wrote an essay one time which said that if a woman wanted to be in public life, she had to grow skin as thick as a rhinoceros. She also has another great saying, which I keep on my desk, that, you know, a woman is like a tea bag, put her into hot water, she gets stronger. So I take a lot of comfort from Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah, but tea bags aren't any good after a couple of infusions, so I hope she's not entirely right there. Have you changed? Has the White House changed you?
You know, I probably won't know that for a while, but I think it has. I don't think you could go through this experience without being changed, and particularly, you know, that first year we had was so hard. My father died shortly after we came to the White House. Then our friend Vince killed himself. And during that year, my mother-in-law was dying, and she died before the year was out. So we encountered so much personal grief, as well as the public problems that come with the territory, that I'm very grateful for. You know, I don't wish suffering on anyone, and I wouldn't wish anyone to go through some of the public assaults that I have. But I must say that I feel that I've certainly grown and changed, and I hope I can be more, you know, more useful.
Can I check with you every year for the next 4 years?
Of course. More than once a year, I hope.
I hope so. Next time in your house.
That's a deal, Michael.
Thank you very much indeed, ma'am. I am honored you've been with us. I found it thoroughly engrossing reading. I recommend it.
Thank you.
And look at this stack. And look, who do you see?
Oh, my goodness, Roger and Molly and Tyler are here.
They all came to see
you. Part of my personal village.
That's Hillary Rodham Clinton. Want to say hello? That's it for the second of our 3 hours. Care to make comment on what you've just heard? 1-800-222-KABC.